what evil lurks in the hearts of men. The shadow knows.
It is Steve Dale's Other World. And boy, I do have what they call radio royalty in the room with me. Well, truly, you are. You're in the Radio Hall of Fame. And this isn't a Chicago Radio Hall of Fame. You are in the National Radio Hall of Fame. I am speaking with the one and only Chuck Shaden. Chuck, when you began doing radio and brought what your thing was, old-time radio, vintage radio, the classics, when you brought them back, what year was that?
1970.
And would you have ever have thought the whole idea would catch on like it ultimately has?
No, I just hoped I could get through the first year of the show, you know.
Yeah, that's radio.
Because it was a little station in Evanston on a Saturday afternoon in May of 1970. And, you know, the beautiful sunny day, the Cubs were playing, and who was listening? I figured, well, my parents and my wife.
Well,
I knew for sure my parents would be listening anyway.
And I listened, you know.
Oh, yeah, we go back, back to that, don't we?
We actually do. And what I have found, you know, so in walking you through the hallways of WGN into the studio, program director recognizes you. You two radio people? We especially admire what you do. What do you think it is about bringing back the classic days of radio? Only the Shadow Knows, or Fibber McGee and Molly, or Jack Benny.
You know,
that radio people especially, like a DJ on the radio today, would be impressed with those shows that go back. I'm doing math in my head now. What, 70 years more?
Oh, easily. Yeah. You know, we're talking radio. I've played essentially radio programs from the 50s, the 40s, and the 30s. And the appeal, it appeals to different people for different reasons. But you ask about the radio people, the professionals, many of whom this is foreign to them, what I've been doing. But it is the roots of their profession.
That's true.
The shows that I did are the roots of radio. And so all the regular radio people who are on the air now, who've been on the air while I was contemporaneously on the air, they tuned in and listened and amazed, because some of them didn't hear these shows before. They weren't born when these shows were on, or they have a vague recollection of it. And they're saying, you know, this is the history of my career, if not their career, at least the
profession.
Work, the
profession. It is.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
It truly is. I remember once back when I did entertainment reporting 1,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago. I interviewed Bob Hope, to get Bob Hope, it was Bob Hope. I mean, how do you get an interview with Bob Hope? And I was a young kid. I don't know, maybe in college, maybe just a year or two out of college. I was writing for several publications, and he said to his agent, "Hey, the kid, he's in radio. I'll do it because he's in radio."
Oh, nice.
Yeah. See? And I got a lot of that, actually, from those old-time performers.
Did you interview Bob Hope?
Gosh, I don't. It was backstage. He was playing at the, and it was a dangerous show. I've been and covered many rock and roll shows.
Mm-hmm.
On this show, my toes were run over by people's walkers. I mean, that's the audience that was there.
Oh, yeah.
It was at the, it was in Merrillville, Indiana. I forget the name of
Holiday Star Plaza.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Right.
And it was backstage in his dressing room. And we just chatted for a half hour, 45 minutes. He gave me a fair amount of time. And it was a good interview, but hopefully not as good as this one. The name of your book, I haven't said it yet, I need to. Chuck Shaden's Radio Days. Chuck Shaden's Radio Days, adding decades to the golden age of radio. You decided to write the book, why?
Well, it actually started out as I was going to write a little remembrance of how I got involved in the radio and that for my children, my grown daughters. At the suggestion of my wife. And she said, you know, you ought to put down a few of the things that, you know, growing up, the kids don't know what you're doing. Dad goes off to work, and they knew I was on the radio, but paid not much attention. And so I started jotting down a few thoughts and going through a few records that I had, recordings, not broadcast recordings, but paper recordings, scrapbooks and so forth. Mm,
okay.
And as I got into it, I thought, you know, I wonder if there's something else in this. Is there and then if there is, for whom? Well, I thought, I'll dig a little farther, and I did, and went through all the cue sheets that I had made up for every program that I did.
What are cue sheets?
A cue sheet is a rundown sheet.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're playing a Jack Benny program, then you're playing a Lights Out program, then you're playing a Lone Ranger show, and so forth and so on. You have to have a rotation, and you have to know how long each of those shows is, so that your engineer — this was not a board operator thing. I never worked the board. And so they would know what I'm planning, what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
And then I would make little notes on the side of it. And I have one for every show that I
you
ever did.
You still have
yeah,
all that. That should be in the Museum of Broadcast.
So I found
Let me ask you about these shows. So
mm-hmm.
you decide, two questions.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 4,000 for you, but two to start. You decide to get into this, to play these old programs.
Yeah.
Why? And how the heck did you get a hold of these shows?
Well, it starts with building a collection of the programs. I miss the old radio shows. I grew up with them.
Yeah, just personally, you mean?
Personally, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I always recalled them after they were all gone, because television came in on the scene in the very late 1940s, and like everybody else, I wanted to see what my favorite radio shows looked like. And there was going to be a screen in our living room, and I was going to see. And in some cases, I was disappointed because the character did not look like the character I saw in my imagination through listening to the sounds on radio. Therefore, I was a little disappointed. In other cases, Jack Benny, whose voice, of course, was very familiar to me because I was a big fan of Jack Benny on the radio, when he was on television, he sounded like Jack Benny, and he looked like Jack Benny because you'd seen Benny in a couple of movies and things like that. So I missed them, and I started wondering, where are all these shows? Whatever happened to them? And we knew mostly that those programs were live shows. And if they were live, they were gone after they did the show. Sometimes they did two shows. If the program came from New York, excuse me, maybe they would do a show for the East Coast, and then they do 2 or 3 hours later, they repeat the show live for the West Coast audience.
Huh.
But they were live, and they were gone into the ether. And I figured we'd never hear them again. And then I happened to discover that somebody came out with a recording of the openings of the old radio shows. You know, just from out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver, the Lone Ranger rides again, and little William Tell overture.
Uh-huh.
And then it would segue into Lights Out, Everybody. And then that would segue into When It's Roundup Time in Texas and the Bloom Is on the Sage. Comics. So we had all those shows. And we had the openings of those shows. So I figured, hey, they must survive someplace. So I did a lot of searching, and I'll cut to the chase.
Yeah.
And started finding programs. And I started collecting them.
Where would you find them? People's garbage cans?
Well, there was a guy on the East Coast who had a little catalog, and he had shows listed, complete programs, and it blew my mind. And so I ordered some. I mean, I was paying some money to get the copies of these
but
shows
this
to
wasn't,
listen to. Them.
So this wasn't, I mean, there was no internet at that point. So
no.
How did you find these people? And the shows, what format were they in that you could then play them on the radio?
Well, I had no idea of playing them on the radio. I just wanted to hear these shows. And so the format that I could get from a fellow who was offering these shows was 7-inch reel-to-reel tape, recorded at 7.5 inches per second, and you would have two sides to the tape, so you had a half an hour on one side and a half an hour on the other side, or you could get a whole hour show split in half on the two sides of the reel-to-reel tape.
And you had a reel-to-reel
player?
And
I have to have a reel-to-reel player. Yeah,
sure,
tape,
otherwise
a tape
can't...
recorder.
Yeah.
And you play that. Well, this was great. And so I found a couple of friends who were also very interested in all of this stuff, and we said, wait a minute. If I bought five shows and he bought five other shows and another guy bought five different shows, then we'd have 15 shows between us. And if we patched two tape recorders together, we could copy the shows for each other. And so we'd each have 15 shows. And that's how meagerly it started.
Now, what were you doing for a living at that point?
I was in the savings and loan business.
Huh.
I was a banker for a financial institution, mostly working in public relations, but that's what I was doing. And I tried to just try to enjoy the shows and share them. It's what I wanted to do. So I would have little parties at our house on a Saturday night and invite friends over.
And they literally stared at the radio?
There, yeah, they stared at the tape recorder.
At the tape recorder that was playing. Right.
Well, I gave them munchies. You know, we had popcorn, potato chips.
What kind of munchies?
Popcorn, potato chips, and soda pop, and occasionally something with two cubes of ice in it. And so, you know, you can listening to the radio as I talk about it, as I know it, these shows, because in those radio days, they were half-hour programs, hour-long programs, quarter-hour shows, and it's a very personal thing. You hardly ever listen to radio in a group. In fact, even today, you rarely listen to radio in a group. It's very personal. You're in your car listening to the radio. You're on your bike listening to the radio. You're at the health club listening to the radio. Whatever it is, you listen, but it's very personal. And so when you're in a group, people can get a little bit antsy, especially if they haven't heard some of these shows ever before. So you need some way to capture the audience. So I thought, well, and everybody used to say, you know, these things belong on the radio again. They're too precious to lose. So again, cutting to my proverbial chase, I went to the little station in Evanston, 1,000-watt daytimer.
You were there.
You did
where
your shows.
Yeah, that's where I began in radio.
Right. Many people did. It was a time when there were stations like that you could begin in radio.
Mm-hmm.
It takes you all the way back to the veriest early days of radio in the late 1920s, when anybody who wanted to get on the radio could get on the radio because they had some kind of a musical talent. Let's say they could play the piano or they could sing a little bit. And they said, I'd like to get on the radio. And the guy says, okay, the manager said, you can be on the radio. And I said, what do I get? He said, well, I can give you a sandwich. And they were usually grateful to get the sandwich. So nobody who started in radio, very few people. Did you get paid when you first started in radio?
Yes.
Yeah, well, see, you're Johnny come lately.
But it was minimum wage. And yeah. At that time, I think it was like playing Olivia Newton-John songs or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah. Were you running the board at the same time?
Yeah. I was playing music.
You were a combo man.
I was a combo man.
For what? You had a four-hour shift or something?
Yeah,
like
something like that. Four or five hours.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. Well, the techs all got paid, but the talent never got paid.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had to buy my hour
right
when I started.
Yeah, brokered programming.
And
right.
You know, who's brokering radio today? No, you can't start, you know. You can't even get into television that way because all these cable channels, they're not doing these local cable shows much anymore.
Yeah.
Like that.
So I luckily
got on the air.
So how did you build your collection from 15 or whatever numbers programs to what must have amounted to thousands? I don't know.
Yeah, I donated my collection of something like 50,000 programs to the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Wow. So how did you get up
my sleeves and bought and installed a rural mailbox in front of our house and started trading. It's a funny thing, Steve, when you're in a hobby, if you've got a stamp collection and I've got a stamp collection, I admire one of the stamps in your collection and I say, would you ever part with that stamp? Thinking maybe I have to pay you for it. And you'd say, well, I don't think so. I want this stamp. And then I'd say, well, do I have a stamp that you would like to have? Would you trade that stamp? And you may or may not, because the stamp that you have may be near and dear to you for some reason, how you got it or whatever the story is. But with the radio shows on tape, I could give you a copy of my of one of my shows, and you could give me a copy of one of your shows, and neither of us would have to give up the original that we had. So all of a sudden, it starts to blossom. And I had a shelf in a dining room that was about 2.5 feet wide, and I had a row of reel-to-reel tape side by side in there. And I said to my wife, if I ever fill this whole shelf with radio shows, I'll think I've died and gone to radio heaven. But that was the very beginning, and that probably held 40 boxes.
Which was ended up being a small percent.
Which
I
was
imagine.
Nothing compared to all. I mean, when we went at the museum, you know, that's long before digital recording, long before all of this.
Sure.
The state of the art has changed incredibly over the years. But I built all that up.
So
then I went to the station in Evanston and said, I've got an idea. What do you think about this? And they said, well, you can produce the show. And I said, well, that means I can host the show, because I wanted to host the show. And they said, yeah, but you also have to produce a sponsor. Because we're not giving you the time. You're gonna buy the time.
Right.
Well, how could I buy the time? Well, I have to get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor, and I was able to buy, with what the sponsor, what I charged the sponsor, I was able to buy 2 hours of time. And then hopefully he had 1 hour, and I hopefully could find other sponsors to fill the second hour, so that maybe I could make a few dollars out of all of this stuff. Because I was still at the savings and loan. Then I graduated to a newspaper job. I was the editor of a group of community newspapers.
I knew
and
that.
This stuff developed all of that sort of thing.
So what was the first sponsor? Was it J-E-L-L-O or maybe Texaco? I mentioned those intentionally because I want to transition or try to you had the opportunity. I think those were the Jack Benny sponsors I just rattled off, right, for a while.
Jello,
yeah. So you had the opportunity to meet people like Jack Benny, those that were still around.
Oh, sure. Well, luckily, I was in Chicago. And in Chicago, there were a lot of people who had some part of their career in the radio days. And in those days of the 70s, the 1970s, because I started right at the beginning of that decade— there were a lot of regional theaters all over, and there was a place called the Mill Run Theater, in
Niles.
Suburban Niles,
right?
And Jack Benny was playing four nights at the Mill Run Playhouse, and I had a press contact at the theater, and I said, I wonder if I could interview Jack Benny, and they said, well, sure, we don't think there'd be a problem, and then they cleared it. And whatever it was, and I went over there in an afternoon, and I sat down with Jack Benny for about 20 minutes and had a face-to-face interview with Jack, primarily talking about his radio career.
So did they...
And this was I started on the 2nd of May in 70, and this was in September of 70, and there I am face-to-face with Jack Benny.
What was that like?
Perhaps it was incredible. I was very nervous, but he made me feel very comfortable. And he mostly was always talking about now his television shows. I had read in some of the things I read about him that he was not a nostalgic guy. He didn't think about going back. He wasn't too much interested in that. He was always talking about this is the next show I'm going to do, the next TV outing, whatever it was. But we talked mostly about his radio days, and he told me how he changed from NBC to CBS, how he... switched from this sponsor to that sponsor, and he remembered all kinds of things about the radio days, and we had a wonderful conversation. And I always figured if I have a conversation with one of these radio people, whom I all admired, all of them, I don't need an autograph. I was not a guy to get autographs. Although when I was a kid, I used to haunt the backstage at the Chicago Theater or the Oriental Theater and get the autographs of the performers who were appearing on stage, but I didn't feel I needed the autograph, except I asked Jack Benny for his autograph because I had an old radio magazine with me that had his picture on the cover. And I asked him, I showed it to him, and he kind of chuckled about it because it was a picture from the 30s or something.
Sure.
And then he signed it. So I was happy to get that autograph. But mostly I didn't because I figured a one-on-one interview is pretty precious to me.
Yeah, well, I've got your autograph, so it meant something to me. The name of the book, and that's what's autographed, is Chuck Shaden's Radio Days, forward by Ken Alexander. Jack Benny is one example, Fibber McGee and Molly, and lots of other performers, too. And names, you know, so it's interesting. Jack Benny's name, I think, at least some younger people, millennials, might know. Fibber McGee and Molly, no way, you know. But they were huge at the time,
absolutely,
and they were Chicago. So who else did you get to talk to?
Well, I talked to Agnes Moorehead, who was called the First Lady of Suspense, and that was a long-running, 20-year run of a radio show, Suspense.
And TV fans know her from Bewitched.
Bewitched, right.
As Endora. So what was she like?
She was. She had handlers with her because she was in town promoting something.
Mm-hmm.
And the handlers told me, you got 5 minutes. 5 minutes? I do a four-hour radio show. You know, I didn't expect to talk to Agnes Moorehead for 4 hours, but
sure.
I wanted 5 minutes, more than 5 minutes. So I patiently waited for two or three other people to do their 5 minutes with Agnes Moorehead. And finally, they waved me into the room, and I sat down at the microphone across from Agnes Moorehead, a second or two of pleasantries. And I knew she was there promoting something. So when you're promoting something, what you want to do is to get that plug out of the way as soon as you can so they feel they have fulfilled their duty to their sponsor.
Sure.
And then I did that, and then I said, I wonder if you'd mind if we would talk about your radio career. And up to that point, she was going through this by the numbers, and her eyes lighted up. Nobody has asked her about radio because she's doing Endora, and she's, she did all those other things, other movies and so forth. And we started talking, and we're talking 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. These other people are fidgeting all around her, the handlers and the other people. And she's talking and responding, and I'm mentioning things and people she knew and she worked with and programs she did. And she's going, now we're approaching 15 minutes, and these people are having apoplexy all around her. And one of them started to come in to the over to the table where the two mics were across from one another, and they started to give me a wave. And she pushed his hand away, and she lifted up forward like you're saying, halt, you know, halt.
Uh-huh.
And they jumped back. I mean, they respected her. And we spent another 5 or 6 minutes talking about the radio days. And she was most cordial. And it was a great interview. And I don't know of too many Agnes Moorehead interviews. Now, that story and a lot of other stories about my interviews are in my book,
which is called
Chuck Shaden's Radio Days.
Yes.
And they're wonderful radio days. I'm so proud of them.
Well, you should be. I mean, you're the guy. Maybe someone else would have done it if you didn't. I don't know. But you did. You brought our roots in radio, the golden age of radio, as it's been called. You brought it back. And for people who don't care, you're probably not listening to this anyway. But for people who do care and who either could relive or now, frankly, for the first time hear some of those great programs...
Well, it's a revelation.
I don't know. I mean, we've got it on WGN now. And I don't know that it would have happened if it wasn't for you, which is, I'm sure, part of the reason why you're in the Radio Hall of Fame.
I love doing all of it. And I felt I wanted to do more than simply say, and now here's an Inner Sanctum radio show. Here's a Jack Benny program. Here's a Bob Hope program. I wanted to know something else. So we always talk about the date of the show. And I might talk a little bit about the scene in the country around the date of the show. Then I would say something about the star of the show or one of the supporting players of the characters and talk about that a little bit. And then, of course, finding interviews, being able to do the interviews with some of the, and these were not all A-list interviews. I talked with sound effects people. I talked with supporting players. I talked with musicians. I talked with producers and directors and writers. The writers were wonderful. A writer is really a closeted performer because he's doing all this work for another performer. And the writers had the greatest stories. I mean, I talked to two of Jack Benny's writers. I talked to writers for other programs. I talked to Milt Josephsberg and George Balzer.
I actually know those names.
Long-time writer. Yeah, well, you've been a listener, too, for a lot of years.
Yeah, you know? And they were television writers later.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, so it's been – I never do imitations. But if I were Jimmy Stewart, I would say that I had a wonderful life, you know?
Well, you affected so many other lives, and that's an even better compliment. The name of the book is Chuck Schaedens' Radio Days, Adding Decades to the Golden Age of Radio. May you be here for many decades longer.
Thank you
And
very much.
thank you for what you've done for the profession that I happen to be in, for the profession of
radio. You're welcome. And all the information anybody needs to know about the book is on my website.
Which is?
SpeakingOfRadio.com.
SpeakingOfRadio.com. That's the only way you can get the book.
Yeah,
right?
it's a limited edition. And it's really, if you've never heard of me and you never heard of the book and you never heard of Roll Time Radio, it's probably not of interest to you. But if you ever heard some of the old radio shows, or if you've been in my audience, which I built up pretty good over 40 years
you sure
of
have.
Broadcasting, and the show that I started back on that Saturday, sunny Saturday afternoon in 1970, continues on the air these days, too.
You know what? You know how to do good radio, too. He's creating pictures in our heads using words, and that's what radio at its best always is. Chuck Schaedens, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Steve.